Chapter 17, The Morning After. Was the resulting legislation even worth it? Had I made the right decision to go through with the severely compromised chartering legislation? May 21st to June 5th, 1991. Imagine running a 30-day marathon at top speed and with few breaks, little sleep, new decisions to be made every few minutes on multiple issues, and angry constituents and lobbyists clamoring for your attention. Then, imagine everything coming to a dead stop. At the stroke of midnight, at the end of May 20th, 1991, the legislative session was over. Done. There was the usual partying at the end of the legislative session. I wasn't up for it. I woke the following day after sleeping nearly 12 straight hours. Even at the relatively young age of 37, I was a physical and emotional mess. I felt battered and bruised after riding an emotional roller coaster for nearly a month. Returning so abruptly to normal life was disorientating. I couldn't recall what normal felt like. Typically, I would look forward to my work as part-time contract counsel with Carlson Company's Radisson Hotels for the rest of the year. And for senators, this would be our only summer off between the campaigns of the 1990 and 1992 election years. The Senate usually has 4-year terms, but due to redistricting, 1 2-year term occurs each decade. So enjoying the short and beautiful Minnesota summer was especially important that year. I felt a certain loneliness as I returned to my suburban home where I lived alone. So much was going through my head, and I had no one with whom to talk or share. Second-guessing everything once you see the light of day is so easy. What could I have done differently in sponsoring the chartering legislation? How much had I sacrificed in relationships with colleagues and friends? Had I let down the dedicated group of supporters who first had the vision to develop the chartering idea? Was the resulting legislation even worth it? Had I made the right decision to go through with the severely compromised chartering legislation? Even with a solid night of sleep, I could not help but be bitterly disappointed with the outcome. The legislation would serve so few students and teachers. Moreover, could just 8 schools even be successful under the severe restrictions? The impact seemed so minimal for such intensive efforts over 3 long years. I was tired and, frankly, deflated. During that very emotional time, I received a note from Ted Coldery. It meant a great deal to me. Even as it came out of conference, the law has a lot of promise. I can't begin to tell you how much I admire what you and Becky did this past 6 months. In the time I've been around, I've seen some very good things done, but never against that kind of opposition. Perpich got a smaller part of his choice legislation than you got of the new schools legislation the first time around, and he was the governor, for heaven's sake. I needed that encouragement. I knew the debate about chartering wasn't over. The unions had made it clear they would seek repeal of the chartering law in the 1992 legislative session. Their stand, as spelled out later in the Minnesota Federation of Teachers News of December 1991, it didn't leave room for any doubt. The bulletin said, MFT will seek the repeal of legislation authorizing charter outcome-based schools passed in the 1991 session and will oppose any similar alternatives that establish schools outside of the public system and fund them with public monies. Even AFT President Albert Shanker, who had originally proposed the idea of charter schools at the Itasca seminar 3 years before, was clearly opposed. In May, Coldery sent Shanker the MFT flyer denouncing Minnesota's chartering bill, suggesting Shanker might want to weigh in on the debate. Shanker didn't reply until August 2nd. Dear Ted, sorry for the delay in responding, but I am not surprised by the MFT's flyers against Minnesota's charter school bill. I, too, was disappointed with the way the bill came out. For one, teachers have to give up most of their rights in order to teach in one of these schools, hardly an incentive. I also understand that, although they could still be in the retirement system, they would have to pay both the employee and employer costs. Again, not an incentive. Second, I wish the architects of the bill had worked out the collective bargaining issues with the teachers' unions. While I understand the potential contradiction between adhering to a particular district's collective bargaining contract and starting off a school fresh, telling unions that they, in effect, would have to begin from scratch in organizing teachers and then bargain at the school level is not a particularly thoughtful solution. It's certainly not an approach designed to make friends, and as you saw, it didn't. This Minnesota bill seems to be traveling to other states. I still see the baby in it, but the bathwater has covered it up. Could it still be shaped up? Sincerely, Al. What a turnaround from Shanker's comments 3 years before. There seemed to be a disconnect here. After all, no one was forcing teachers to enter chartered schools or change their benefits. And why would Shanker consider holding back those teachers who wanted to take on something new in their professional life? I didn't know Shanker personally. What I did know is that sponsoring chartering had strained my personal relationships with teacher unions and their leaders on the state and local level. This was made clear after John Costoros penned a column after the 1991 education legislation in the July issue of Minnesota Law and Politics. Costoros had written that there were bad feelings between legislators and teacher unions. Barry Nowak of the Robbinsdale Federation of Teachers responded to Costoros and copied me. His letter addressed me specifically. Though she has demonstrated a commitment to improving public education by promoting several good programs, such as Success by Six and Early Childhood Education, she is not positively supporting school reform with her charter school amendments. From the Federation's point of view, we had input into this piece of legislation only after Senator Reichscott and her educational advisors had drafted a very onerous version. Once it was clear we were prepared to testify against the charter school bill in committee hearings, Reichscott invited us to meet with her advisors on this issue. The final draft, which passed as part of the school finance bill, was substantially modified as a result of our early political work in the Senate and the resistance of several House members on the conference committee. It is our understanding, Reichscott informed the conferees, that this is only the beginning and that she intends to return next session to strengthen the bill with additional provisions desired by her educational advisors. As you imply in your article, it is most unfortunate that proponents of improved public education, such as Senator Reichscott, Joe Nathan, Ken Nelson, and MFT leaders like Sandra Peterson, Louise Sundin, Marsha Averbuch, and myself, do not work together more constructively to improve the public schools. Hopefully, your article may serve as a catalyst for this to happen. Once bills are drafted and sent to committees, the power battles begin. This was the position we found ourselves in too often during the 1991 session. As I reflect back on my strained relationship with the union leaders, I now believe I could have involved them earlier in the discussions about the chartering legislation. In the end, I still don't think we could have reached an agreement on the fundamentals of chartering. I do think, however, that chartering supporters would have been in a better place if I had been less interested in persuading union members of my point of view and more interested in actively listening to their concerns. People can disagree and still feel heard. I didn't do well on that score. I came to that realization years later after focusing on my personal leadership growth once I left the legislature. I realize now that as a relatively young lawyer and legislator, I was more about advocating and less about generous listening. The most successful legislators, particularly legislative leaders, can accomplish both of those goals. Perhaps if I had approached the conversations with a more open mind, we could have developed that final compromise together, allowing the unions to share in the ownership of chartering. And perhaps, if I had been curious enough to learn more about the history and rationale for unionism, it would have been less us versus them. As it turns out, I wasn't the only one reflecting on all that had happened. As Sandra Peterson said in her 2011 interview, "I think I was a bit torn because I felt the reality was that we were going to have some form of a charter school. And because Shanker had even proposed them, I was a bit intrigued. But I also wanted to control it. I wanted to find ways that the union could work with it and that the union could find some safeguards if it was going to move." These perspectives have come with time, but I was still in an uncomfortable emotional place when I received a note dated June 6, 1991, from former Senator John Brandel, a well-respected colleague who had retired from the state Senate the year before. Even today, I treasure this note. Despite my self-doubt, it comforted me with its assurance that something good would come of the chartering legislation. "Dear Ember, this is to tell you of my admiration for your leadership on the charter schools issue. Your intelligence and industry have always stood out in the legislature. And this year, on this issue, your courage and toughness saved what in years to come will be recognized as the beginnings of one of the major breakthroughs on education policy in our time. Best regards, John." On June 4, 1991, Governor Arne Carlson signed the Omnibus Education Funding Bill. Chartered schools were now law in Minnesota. But was that law nothing more than 8 chartered schools that didn't have the independence to be successful? Or was it, as Brandel predicted, the beginning of a major breakthrough in education? As I sat at home, recovering from the intensity of the legislative session, I had no idea chartering was already a part of the national conversation about education reform. 2 developments from 2 different points on the political spectrum would take us in the direction of Brandel's prediction.